What are you crazy? You're the freaking Beatles. You're the biggest band in the world. You haven't written any songs? What is this insanity?
Welcome, welcome, welcome to After the Bell. I am still Corey Graves, and as we shift our focus to Sin City for Money in the Bank, we would be remiss not to take a peek at Hell in a Cell in our rear view mirror. Of course, I can't do that all on my own. Please welcome the Andy Summers to my sting, the voice of NXT 2.0, Vic Joseph. But Vic, before you say hello to the WWE Universe, I have to welcome the third part of our trio. We can't truly be the police without our Stuart Copeland. And assuming that role, one of the biggest stars on Friday Night SmackDown. He is a master strategist. He is doing the bidding of the bloodline in a spectacular way. Please welcome Sami Zayn.
Thank you, Corey. Appreciate that. You know, I suddenly miss having you on Friday Night SmackDown with that warm that warm intro, and fine, you know, just having somebody in my corner was so nice. And I felt like you always got me, you know?
I need my Sami Zayn fix. I miss getting to hang out with you on Fridays. You were one of the smiling faces that always made Fridays a little more bearable. And I deal with Vic each and every Wednesday. So,
what
you know,
what does that mean?
It means I had to have an ally.
Yeah, Vic, no offense. I like you. But like, you're not, I don't know, you're not a ray of sunshine or anything, you know?
Well, I'm not meant to be a ray of sunshine. That's part of my charm.
Like, you don't walk in and brighten a room with your lively, you know.
Oh, I come in and tell it like it is, man. This sucks. This city sucks. That's it. It's raining. I don't want to do that.
That's the Vic I know.
Yeah, that's the best Vic that there is. I actually am glad you're here, Sami, because I'm actually worried about Corey.
Why?
Oh,
Pizzagate 2022, if you weren't on social media.
No. You quit doing Pizzagate. That's
I'm not sure you can mention Pizzagate.
Yeah, you can't talk about that on a podcast. That's like a big time, because it's a huge political conspiracy with.
Oh, well, let me rephrase that then.
So now we know that Vic's a member of QAnon. That's what we've established.
Let me rephrase it.
We don't need to talk about my pizza incident. It's been resolved. I received my refund. I was upset for about 15 minutes and I got my pizza.
Well, see, that's a totally different pizza gate from the other one he's talking about.
Thank you, Sami.
Very, very different.
So what happened? He got bad pizza, got angry.
Oh, it wasn't bad pizza, dude.
It was a pizza that had to have been delivered with malicious intent. Bad pizza where, you know, maybe the cheese slides off the top of the pizza or the toppings are stuck to the box occasionally. You know, we've all had a less than ideal pizza delivery experience. Mine looked as though it had been devoured and regurgitated and then spiked like a football on my front porch. It was very, very, very malicious delivery.
It was like when Ace Ventura delivered the first package in Ace Ventura 1, he was just kicking it through the hallway. That's essentially what happened to this pizza.
Let's talk about Sunday. Let's talk about something in the more immediate past, that being the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. Sami, I believe it was a travesty that you were not featured on the premium live event known as Hell in a Cell, given your history within the company. But we're not here to argue all that right here and there. Let's talk about what the entire business is buzzing about. Sami, you no doubt have heard. I imagine you've seen, but you're a busy guy. You definitely know the fallout from the main event this past Sunday, Seth Rollins, Cody Rhodes inside Hell in a Cell. A match that last week here on After the Bell, I hyped as being one that I could see people as they grow. Younger fans who are watching now, watching what went down Sunday as a pivotal moment or I saw that match and it made me want to do that. I saw that match and that's what really solidified me being a fan of this era of WWE or just the business as a whole. That was before anybody knew that Cody had been injured. That was just me, you know, putting over the talents and two guys that I'm a huge fan of and what they've done to this point, starting back at WrestleMania Backlash. Based on what you know about what went down, Sami, from your perspective as a professional, as a sports entertainer, as a competitor, what do you think this past Sunday's match means in the grand scheme of what's going on in the business?
Well, so I'm inclined to agree to an extent here about that. That's going to be a match that people will talk about for many years to come. And one of the things that makes it so special, and this is not something you could plan, is just circumstance.
Right.
Some of these matches, you could never recreate them. You know, I was actually having a conversation with someone backstage last week. Someone new to the company was asking, what matches should I watch? They're new to WWE. They work here now. They wanted to know what matches. I'm really starting to really like the in-ring aspect of wrestling, not just the storytelling. What should I watch? And a few matches came up. But then I realized as we were talking about these different matches, some of these matches are so special only because of the exact time and the exact place in which they took place. So, for example, and this might not be the best example, but if you watch Shawn versus Undertaker from WrestleMania 25, probably the greatest WrestleMania match of all time.
Definitely in the conversation, 100%. Sure.
But if you watch it now, not knowing at the time that those kind of matches didn't really happen, because matches like that have been imitated or
attempted to recreate.
Yes. You see a lot of that now, but you know, that was what, 13 years ago. And that just didn't happen, especially with guys like Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. You never saw anybody kick out of any of their stuff like that, their finishes. So it was very special because of the time and place and when it took place. And I think what's going to make this match special, even though it's an unfortunate circumstance, is Cody's injury. Him braving that injury, which was so visual, like you can see, there's no way around that.
And I want to talk about that, the visually speaking, Sammy, because I was there ringside in the Allstate Arena. You know, you've been and performed in that arena. That's generally one of our loudest, most raucous buildings. Love going to Chicago for that very reason. The crowd was at 11, man, for both entrances. Wow. Seeing Seth in the polka dots. And that disrespect.
That was a great touch.
Cody making his entrance, and they did the announcements. And when Cody peeled his jacket off, I've never experienced something like that from a live crowd.
Wow.
And that I did in that moment where everybody went, oh yeah, this is going to be, oh no. It was like as though everybody in attendance felt guilty for watching what they were about to watch, because everybody realized there's no way Cody can be. This is not a storyline. This is dangerous. This is scary. And it added a whole other dimension. And it took the guys 4 or 5 minutes of actual action before the crowd got back into it, because it was like everybody felt like they were watching something they shouldn't be seeing.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting.
That's a feeling that you could, again, you have to be there to feel that. You know what I mean? And that's not something you can recreate.
Right. It was a perfect storm. I mean, all the different aspects.
And you know, because you've worked hurt over the years, very rarely do you have an injury that's that visible.
Right.
Right. So like, you know, there's guys who, you know, even if the commentator says, oh, this guy's working with a torn ACL tonight, or his shoulder is hanging out, you can't really see it. So you don't fully understand it as a fan.
Right.
As a performer, we do, but as a fan. But because Cody's injury had such a spectacular visual component to it, like you said, it almost sucked the air out of the building for a second. And this, oh my God. He's going to wrestle like this?
Yes.
So I think that's the part that's going to make it the most memorable, that aspect of it.
There was such an audible hush, Corey, to your point, because I was sitting at home watching it, that you heard everyone go almost in unison. It was unreal. You felt at home the air like leave the arena. And you were like, I was like, whoa, wait a minute, what just happened? Like, it was wild.
It was unbelievable. And to me, it was just the emotion, the story. To your point, Sammy, the circumstance was the X factor. I had no doubt that those two, you've been in the ring with both of these guys. You know what amazing talents these guys are, and they want to be the flag bearers that carry this place into the future. And they're doing a great job. And I had no doubt in my mind it was going to be an epic, memorable match. But that extra wrinkle, that little layer of the injury really just turn things up to a whole new level. I want to ask you, because you had mentioned something about a fellow competitor asking you which matches you should watch. But what stood out to me was why they want to watch the match, because they had learned to enjoy the in-ring aspect as opposed to the storytelling aspect.
I should be clear. It wasn't a performer, in-ring performer. It was a backstage person.
Okay.
Who had recently been hired by WWE with regards to creative services and stuff like that.
Okay.
But now that they were working, you know, around the WWE, it was also, they were starting to get hooked on the in-ring aspect more than just the story.
Perfect. Regardless of who the person was, it was that perspective that I was after, because you are a guy, and Vic and I were talking offline before we started the show. You were a guy who took the journey to WWE based primarily on wrestling, on matches, on good matches, on the independence, the whole rise of, you know, that masked superstar that you used to run into from time to time. Sami Zayn arrived in NXT, you and your matches with Cesaro, and you were an in-ring guy for the the most part. Was there a moment, was there a light bulb that went off in your brain where you went, okay, wait, there's a lot more to this than just doing cool moves and having great matches? You just had one of the most featured matches at WrestleMania all weekend with Johnny Knoxville of Jackass fame. Certainly not what we're used to seeing Sami Zayn do, but it's something you've totally embraced and you're hitting home runs time after time. Was there a conversation or something that you realized where you went, it's not just about hitting haluva kicks and doing cool spots anymore?
So the first instance of this actually did take place on the Independence.
Okay.
And it was myself and Kevin were doing a storyline. We were tag team partners. And then we were doing this storyline where we were going to split up and it was going to culminate in a year long program. And a year is already very hard to do.
Especially on the Independence.
And well, you know, back then I used to say, especially in the Independence, but now that I'm in WWE, I'd say, oh, especially in WWE because of the week to week content that we have to create.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, at the time it was kind of unheard of to build a story for a year like that. And we did. And I think that was the first time that I really took the reins on a story. And then when we did the match would have been good as it is, but it was the culmination of that year-long story that made it so memorable. People still talk about it to this day. And it's been 12 years or whatever it is. So that was the first time that I can really consciously remember taking the reins on a storyline, you know, along with Kevin. I don't want to say it was all me, but just really sinking that creative aspect of the story, not just the match, and realizing, oh, wow, it heightens it so much more when there's a rich story behind it. What I mean? And if you think about all these great matches we're talking about, there's always a great story leading up to it too, always.
So for you to sort of step out of the box that you had existed in, not necessarily by your own choice, but again, I'm thinking back to what made Sammy a household name back in the NXT days. And it was always going out there and you had the passion, you had the emotion, all of that sort of thing. But now I want to focus on WrestleMania particularly because that was entertainment, right? You had to know going in, you and Johnny Knoxville weren't going to have a quote unquote five-star classic match. You had something entirely unto itself. It was a spectacle.
Yeah.
In my opinion, Vic and I stood there in the arena, in the stadium and watched it go down. And I cannot compliment you enough. I believe I actually texted you after the fact because it was like, wow, you superseded expectations. You have to give yourself a little credit for that. But how did that come to be? What made that so special?
Man, I don't even know where to begin. But I'd like to, there's one little statement you made that I'd like to expand upon a little bit here.
Please.
But I don't want to get into because it can become a real rant here. I don't want to go into the anatomy of a match and all this kind of thing. But while it was a spectacle and while it was dressed with all kinds of, special effects. If you want to call it that, right? And stuff that you don't normally get to do with a normal WWE superstar in a normal wrestling match. I still think it was actually a great wrestling match. Because if you look at the things that actually the components of a wrestling match, they're all there.
Sure.
We didn't throw anything out of the framework of a wrestling match to create this match.
Right.
It was an entertaining spectacle within the framework of a wrestling match. So there's still an established babyface and a good guy and a bad guy. And the storytelling is all there. And even the gags and the goofs that Johnny Knoxville.
The timing.
Well, there's that. And there's also, those are his moves because he's not a wrestler.
I guess so. I never looked at it like that. Sammy, we got time, buddy. I brought you on here for a reason. Let's talk. Let's chat.
Sammy, that's a great analogy because now that I'm thinking about you saying that, I'm like, oh yeah, if that was quote unquote a video game, that'd be his signature move.
That's where I went. Exactly. I went to the old WrestleMania arcade game where Yokozuna had a salt bucket and somebody had the razor
on the chop. Yeah. Like I get it.
Yeah.
And if you look at it in that context, then it does make a lot more sense. A little profound to hear you explain it that way.
I'm telling you, if you go back and watch it and you don't look at the and it's very hard to do because, well, actually, so it's, here's a, okay, let me slow it down here a little bit. One of the things that we run into because we work here and we're surrounded by this all the time and especially you, Corey, because you worked in the ring for so many years, sometimes it's hard to take off the insider goggles and just put on fan goggles.
Yes.
Right? Like you're looking at structure, you're looking at the things that you know are the components. So one of the things I'm really proud of is that that match blinded so many people internally to all of that. Like people who know the business inside out, who've been working forever, forgot about match structure, forgot about match psychology, when you should do this, where you should do that. And they were just reacting in real time to all of it. But if you actually look back on it, structurally speaking, it's a normal wrestling
match. It checks all the boxes. I'm going to have to watch it back. Because Vic and I stood there in AT&T Stadium. We were in our little corral area for the announcers that weren't working at the time. And there were only a few moments all weekend that I got to do that. And Vic and I were standing there. And in particular, the body slam.
Yeah.
May have been, and I say this without any exaggeration, may have been the loudest AT&T Stadium was all weekend long. Wow. With the exception of when Stone Cold's glass broke. That's how the magnitude of that moment. And Vic and I are looking at each other laughing and smiling and going, God, this is so much fun. And it was different and it stood out. And in the wake of WrestleMania, a lot of people still talking about that matchup because it was just so different.
I think people talk about that for years and years. Definitely. But for maybe different reasons than, let's say, a Cody and Seth match from Hell in a Cell that we're talking about. But so another thing that I'm really proud of that match is what one of the things you touched on earlier when you brought it up. It's we created something that doesn't actually, like, it doesn't really exist. There's not really a match like that anywhere else.
Right.
Because there's only one Johnny Knoxville and one Sami Zayn and one WrestleMania where those things could exist. Going back to what we were talking about with Cody and Seth, circumstance. There is an element of circumstance to this because you can't recreate that match. You just can't recreate that match. Like, for example, you could watch Undertaker Shawn and you could be two guys on the Independence and you can do your little version of that match. You can't redo a version of this match because it doesn't exist.
Right.
Like there's no other party boy. There's no other wee man. Right. There's no other giant hand. You know what I mean?
Was there ever a moment all WrestleMania weekend or in the lead up to this where you, cause we're about the same age and you grew up and Jackass was a cultural phenomenon here in, at least in the United States where everyone and their brother was obsessed with it. Do you ever have any moments in this process where you went, man, Party Boy is shaking his parts at me at WrestleMania?
Well, so, and I said this in a couple of interviews, but I didn't grow up a Jackass fan.
Okay.
So, but I obviously knew what, you know, what a huge deal it was and all that. So there were definitely moments in the lead up, like, man, I never thought 20 years ago when I started wrestling that I'd be wrestling Johnny Knoxville at WrestleMania. Right, of course you have those thoughts, right? But I had to do a little bit of homework for the match too, because I had a preconceived notion of what Jackass was from 20 years ago to when I first made the decision, I'm not into this. 20 years ago, when it was like, hey, there's this thing called Jackass. And all I understood about Jackass is a bunch of guys getting hurt. And I don't really like watching guys get hurt or people like hurting themselves. Kevin is different. He loves those videos of like people slipping and falling or whatever. He loves that stuff. I'm kind of squeamish. I'm like, God, don't show me that. So I didn't really know what Jackass was about. And I kind of made the decision early on, like, oh, it's not for me. But then, you know, now revisiting it and all, I've said this before, but I find it ironic that I missed the point of what Jackass was all about. Because the reason Jackass was a huge cultural phenomenon is because of the camaraderie and was the guys doing everything. Yes. It's the crew and you get me and I get you. And like, it's the laughs and it's so funny and ironic that I would miss the point because I love wrestling.
Yes.
And people constantly miss the point about wrestling. So this and that. And it's like, well, you don't even understand what this is about. That's not what it's about. So it's just so funny that I would have missed the point. And I'm quick to call myself out on that. And I'll admit I was wrong. So all this to say, going back and watching Jackass a little bit going into the match, you know, it was kind of like I wanted it to be a really true pro wrestling Jackass collaboration crossover. And I think that's what it was. If you go back and watch it and like maybe a little elements of Home Alone as well, but that's a different thing. But that's kind of what I wanted. I wanted it to be true to what happens when wrestling meets Jackass. And I think we nailed it.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. Killed it. You know, as Corey said, we stood there with like our childish glow on our faces. We were looking around at everyone rising, and there was a moment in the match that I think I said, oh, they're about to go nuts. And I think he kicked out of something and the place like erupted in laughter. And the match was great itself, but I want to go back to you actually diving into this story to the point where you did the stuff on social media. Because I think that also is now getting lost after the match. Like, this was that beautiful story told, but through the power of Instagram and Twitter and things like that.
Well, so that's another thing that that I take a lot of pride in now, looking back on all of it and talking about circumstance. The buildup to that match is also not a buildup you could have done with anyone else. I can't build my Hell in a Cell match with Seth Rollins, for example, by flying his phone number over Los Angeles. Like, that's just not, that's not how you do, you know, that's just not how you build programs.
It's not what that was. It was such a unique thing, right?
Exactly. We got to go so far out of the box, and I got kind of addicted to it. I was like, oh man, here's all these things we can do next. And there's just so much awesome stuff that we could do that I think is like him giving out my phone number and me taking all those calls. And I think that's going to be very, very memorable.
It was so
very
good.
Exciting. And there was so much other stuff that was on the table to do that for one reason or another, we didn't get to do. But it just, and one of the big things was the red carpet premiere at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood, going to the movie premiere. And that was such an awesome moment for me. I've never done anything like that before, but it was my Andy Kaufman moment a little bit, with Dave Letterman. And the thing that I find funny is, in this case, I was Andy Kaufman and the wrestler.
Yeah.
I was both, you know what I mean?
You married the two, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which is funny. But it just got me so addicted, or not, almost going back to what you asked me about, when was the light bulb moment of, you know, transitioning from good match guy to storytelling guy or whatever it is. This was a bit of a light bulb moment for like, oh man, there's just so many creative ways I want to do things. And I hope I can do them. It's kind of hard sometimes here with the nature of how we do things, but it just got me so excited about the out of the box ways to build a story or tell a story and things to do and ways to build your character, all this fun stuff. And I couldn't have done it with anyone else except Johnny Knoxville, because he's not a conventional wrestler. B, he's not even a conventional celebrity.
That's true.
You know, like if I was wrestling Leonardo DiCaprio, we wouldn't be doing this stuff. It's because that's what Johnny Knoxville does. He does gags and goofs, and he gets you this way and that way, whatever. So it could only have worked with him. So that was another thing that a big takeaway for me is the creative way we can go about telling stories and getting character stuff over and doing things that we don't always do. But it remains to be seen how much of that I get to do going forward.
You mentioned Andy Kaufman and obviously a lot of external influences. What other external influences do you bring to the table somewhat commonly when it pertains to you and what you're doing on screen, and whether it be in a match or who you're portraying as a character? What inspires Sami Zayn these days?
I just try not to think of wrestling, I think, is the big thing. I try not to use wrestling influences at this point. For sure, there are people that, I'm wearing a Bobby the Brain Heenan shirt, and I don't know if you could see it now.
Sure can.
But I'm definitely like, there's pieces of his act, and they're so small, but they're in this. And there's like Terry Funk, and there's all these little pieces of little, and they're so small that I almost can't credit them as major influences, but they're just tiny little things. Or Roddy Piper is another one. But they're not people that I've built my entire character around. The character stuff for me is more about like, I just don't think of wrestling. I try not to think of wrestling. I try to think of this as a character in a movie or a television show and whatever.
I keep drawing the parallel, and I was hoping to be able to say something regarding it on commentary, but the opportunity didn't present itself, about how your alliance with the Bloodline recently reminds me of the episode of The Office where Pam created her own position. She started telling people she was the administrative assistant, and enough people went, okay, yeah, I guess this is Pam. She's our admin. She handles all these different things now. And she eventually gets the role and everything she wanted, because she just faked it until she made it, basically. Right, and that's very much the mentality that I'm like, I can explain that. Sammy's just, he's trying to get in and he's just doing it his own way.
That's a great example, actually. That's a great example. And it's just, I think that's how I started looking at wrestling and the business and all that stuff is things that you could compare it to outside of wrestling if you've never seen wrestling before. Like, oh, like this kind of like that episode of Seinfeld or The Office or whatever. You know what I mean? That's a great, I couldn't have said it better. That's perfect. And that's how I approach all the character stuff.
And I appreciate that. And I think that's something that I've only recently started looking at from how I'm presenting the business. Because to your point, it's very easy to get stuck in the wrestling bubble. That's we are with each other. We are constantly exposed to the same people and the same mentalities and the same goals. So to be able to look outside the box, as cliche as that sounds, is of the utmost importance. And it makes me wonder, and Vic, I think this is going to strike a little closer of a chord with you, looking at NXT 2.0. And what NXT has become since the days of Corey Graves, Sami Zayn, Seth Rollins, the Wyatt family, that whole crew, and what NXT was when we were there, it's very different. But now you see a lot of young guys and girls trying to find themselves from a character perspective. Sami, I know NXT is very, very near and dear to your heart. Did you get to keep eyes on that nowadays? And I want to get your thoughts on what NXT 2.0 is.
Well, so it's actually funny that you bring this up because I happened to stumble upon a video or two, one of them was actually today, of myself in NXT very early, very, very early. And I was doing the same thing that these guys in NXT 2.0 were doing in the beginning, which is just trying to find yourself, especially for me, because I had come from a different background, right, with different character and all this stuff. So I was trying to find my voice. I was trying to find my facial expressions, all of that stuff. I was trying to find myself. And I kind of don't remember that part of NXT so much because I tend to remember the later half. Once that character got a bit more developed,
right,
and then we were, you know, telling good stories and having good matches and building NXT to becoming what it, you know, what people now know about NXT.
Right, right.
But there's that first little year where I'm there, where I'm still kind of finding my footing. And now when I see these guys and girls in NXT 2.0, I mean, I'm having this today. I just saw this video today. So today's when I made the connection of like, oh, this is exactly where these guys and girls are now.
Right.
And because sometimes there might be a tendency to watch something. And in NXT, it's different because you're forgiving it because you know they're developing themselves.
Correct.
But there's the inclination sometimes. Sorry, my thoughts are a little scattered here, but let me just jump to something else. Sometimes one of the things when guys get called up from NXT to the main roster, you'd hear a lot about like, oh,
there's a perceived disconnect.
Oh, yeah. It didn't crossover right. And the main reason for that, and I realized this many years ago, is because in NXT, they got to see that transition and they got to come along for the ride and watch you blossom into this character. And then when you go up to the main roster, all they're seeing is this fully fleshed out character and they don't know what made you who you are. So they're just like, oh, you're this thing. Okay.
You don't have the backstory to the character as to why you care
about them. Exactly. It's like, this might not be the best example, but if you ever had friends that you grew up with, and if you met them now, you'd probably never talk to them in a million years.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
But the reason you forgive them for all their flaws and all is because you saw what made them the person they are today.
Correct.
You saw that whole transition from childhood and whatever. You understand why they are the way they are.
Everything is within context.
Exactly. So it comes back to that and just understanding it, right? So I think sometimes fans or even us, maybe we tend to watch something and go like, oh, this person, like this isn't for me. This character is not. But in NXT 2.0, it's a bit more forgivable because we know they're developing. We know they're finding their footing. And I actually kind of find it exciting because it depends on why you're watching NXT. If you're watching NXT right before the reboot or whatever, those are, you know, fully fleshed out characters that you know what you're watching. But now it's kind of reverted back to what it was when you and I first got there, right, like 2012, 2013, which is, hey, let's throw these people out there. And now on live television, so that's crazy, but let's throw these people out there and let them find themselves and let the fans gravitate towards certain aspects of themselves. And then they'll, little by little, they're carving out this, you know, this sculpture of what they're going to end up being. So I find it exciting in that way.
One of the unique things too, and Corey and I have talked about it, is you get to go along for that ride, but as a fan, you can quote unquote latch on to somebody and be part of that entire journey from day one and to whatever. And I think that's interesting this day and age in the bubble we live in of sports entertainment.
I still get fans will say to me when they come up, they'll be like, I was a fan since the NXT days or since the Ring of Honor days or PWG days or whatever. So I do think that, again, talking about friends you knew from a long time ago and that strengthening the bond because you know the backstory. I think fans really like that. They want to be along for the journey. They don't want to just be handed a guy or a girl and be like, this is your product. You take it and you'll like it because we said you'll like it. Right. Like, whoa.
They need to know why they should care across the board.
Yes. They want to be made to care.
Think back to promo class with Dusty Rhodes. We can all communicate, right? We can all convey something, but why? What is going to make fans care about what we're saying? Why we're saying it? Our motivations, good guy or bad guy. When you have that complete package, that's when people latch on. I can give you a backstory and tell you why Kevin Owens is the way he is. I can tell at this stage in your career why Sami Zayn is who he is versus somebody who just pops on the screen. Okay, they look cool. Oh, and they're telling me that, they're beating up the guy that I like, so
why do I
don't
care?
Think I'm supposed to like him, but I need more.
And, actually just touching on something you said there, when you were asking me earlier about the character stuff, one of the things that I really like about the character stuff that I've been doing for a while is it's all kind of transitioned seamlessly into the next phase. So, if you go back I come back from injury in, 2018 or 2019, the years start to blend to me a little bit now, but I start losing or whatever. And then I do this thing where I say, I'm going to make it about somebody else and I'm going to help other people. And I become Shinsuke's Nakamura's manager / mouthpiece or whatever. And then that transitions into this thing with the Great Liberator. And then the title, I win the Intercontinental title. And then that gets taken away from me. And then I come back and I win and I'm this undisputed champion. And then I lose and I claim it was a conspiracy. And then I go down this crazy conspiracy rabbit hole. And then each part of the character made sense because of the previous thing that happened. It's not just hey, I'm doing a new thing and here it is. Sami Zayn acts like this now or talks like this now.
You set up a pillar build a bridge.
Why is he acting this way all of a sudden?
You're right about that. How is that something you had to consciously bring forward when you realize, okay, hey, this is what's coming next for me. It's up to me to bring the past forward, or did it kind of happen without a whole lot of struggle?
So it's I would say less about the past and more about forward. What's the next step from here? Right. Okay. So I had this whole conspiracy, the documentary, all this stuff. Okay. Well, it's over now. What's the next step for the character? Logically, what I mean? Where does this person go next? But so that way it's it's adding on to the layers that are already there rather than just saying okay, I'm done doing the conspiracy stuff. Now my new thing is whatever, fisherman or, you know what I mean? That's the one thing this is a personal pet peeve of mine sometimes. When you start seeing characters act a different way and you have no idea why they're acting this way. It's
100%.
I was doing, this is a thing with the girls a few years ago. It's gotten much better now. But I remember, especially on house shows, one week the girls would be good guys and then the next they're bad guys. Or even on TV, Alicia Fox would be a good guy one week and then a bad guy one week. And you don't know how can you as a fan latch on, as you're talking about, when there's that inconsistency?
That lack of emotional connection.
It's just inconsistency. I need to know what's going on.
Before you can care, you need to know what you're trying to care about.
And when you're acting a certain way, I need to kind of know why you're acting that way. Correct. You know what I'm saying? That's it. That's all. Even the conspiracy stuff, I didn't necessarily set out to do I'm going to do a conspiracy character. But once I lost the title and I started going further and further down this persecution complex, and it's the reason he thinks there's this conspiracy is because he lost. He's not just all of a sudden talking about conspiracies. There's always a reason why you're doing what you're doing. That's what I'm
getting. And the motivation for any character, that's what separates a great movie villain, like a Joker or even a Thanos, who has motivations that you can understand. And it's up to you to kind of pick do I agree? Do I not agree? Is this, and it kind of lets, it's almost a choose your own adventure when you put the motivations out there. Like, yeah, did Sammy get screwed? At the commentary desk, I of course take that side and I have a blast with it just to have fun because that's what entertains me. But it's kind of a choose your own adventure in any aspect of the business. But I totally agree the importance of context and acknowledging everything the character has done up to that given point in their career.
Well, while we're talking about NXT and finding oneself, recently, this past Tuesday, someone, Sammy, you know very well, Apollo Crews made his return to NXT. And anyone who knows Apollo Crews knows he wears his heart on his sleeve. Did I freeze?
Is that a question?
Well, my computer keeps freezing.
You said he wears his heart on his sleeve.
I keep looking at you guys. And I was stopped. And then everyone was looking at me. And I was like, what the hell is going on?
Hey, Sammy, I got a question for you. I like potatoes.
Shut the f*** up. Well, while we're talking about, you know, development and NXT and your thoughts on individuals, recently this past Tuesday, Apollo Crews returned to NXT. Anyone that knows Apollo knows he wears his heart on his sleeve. What are your thoughts about Apollo Crews coming back to NXT 2.0?
Sorry, I'm just laughing about it.
Broke us.
I couldn't, yeah.
Well, I'm looking at the screen and all of you go, and I'm like, well, I might as well stop because I'm frozen.
I'm sorry. How did the question end again? I'll take it from the question.
Leave this all in, Alex. All right, Vic. I'm sorry, Vic. Compose yourself. I'm going to lay out here. I'm going to give the floor back to Vic. We're going to let Vic try to phrase his question in an answerable
manner. Times.
I know. It's my
fault.
This is it.
This is going to be the one.
We can just take it from the question. You nailed the question. So
the question was essentially thoughts on Crews coming back to NXT.
I think it's a great opportunity for him. I do think he's great. I mean, just it's another, I guess if we go back to consistency, that's kind of been one of the things that's plagued Apollo Crews is anytime he's gotten any kind of traction, for one reason or the other, momentum isn't on his side.
Right.
So hopefully in NXT, it just provides him the platform. Like you look at what Mandy Rose is doing. I think she's having a major career. I don't even want to call it resurgence because I think she's actually better than she's ever been.
Sure.
So who knows? I think it could be a great thing. It could be a great opportunity. And actually, historically, Corey, even going back to when you and I were in NXT, a lot of times a main talent roster would come back. Cesaro.
That's the one that stands out to me. And let's talk about, I mean, Cesaro, that match with you in NXT is still talked about as one of, if not the best match of that era of NXT. And before that, Cesaro was a rugby player-ish, somebody's boyfriend kind of, who just happened to be really good at wrestling.
Right.
And then that fresh coat of paint and getting to interact and show the world what he was capable of alongside superstars such as yourself really launched him into the next phase of his career.
Right. I think it's just sometimes on the main roster, there's just so many talent and so little TV time. And sometimes people just don't get to showcase the best of themselves. And I think going back to Cesaro back in 2013, Apollo Crews present day, I think that could be a thing for both of them. And I think NXT just provides a bit of a platform to just more time, more of a platform to really
flesh yourself out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I remember we talked to Dolph Ziggler on the show a month or so ago while he had, I think it was right before he'd become NXT champion, but he was explaining how exciting it was to him after all these years doing everything there is to do in WWE to really work out the kinks, almost like a major comedy superstar. Going back to clubs and doing work.
Yeah.
And just trying to figure out, hey, I got new material. Yeah, yeah. Oh, wait, you're Dave Chappelle. Yeah, but Dave Chappelle is going to be in the back room of the comedy store trying out new things in front of a small group of people before he brings it to the masses. And I think that if you look at it from that perspective, there is a great opportunity for Crews and anybody else who heads back to NXT.
You know, another huge example of this actually is Drew McIntyre.
Yes.
Drew McIntyre got fired. I mean, he got let go.
Great example.
Altogether. And then when he came back to NXT, now he was in a place, in a position, in a platform where he could really show what he can do. And then it reopened their eyes on the main roster to go, oh man, we love this version of him. I think it could be a great opportunity for him. And I've been in the ring with him. He's very, very good.
Does Apollo Crews fall into that when you were talking about the transition? We go from NXT to the main roster and then you get there and there's like, well, we don't know the backstory. Does he fall under that umbrella?
I don't think so because I don't think he really was all that built up in NXT either.
He was only there for a cup of coffee. He had a rather quick ascent.
Was he down there less than a year, right? Would you say?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, he wasn't there long. And even when he was there, he didn't get to do a whole lot of storylines that really got to show personality. The best thing that he did in that first NXT run that I remember was they did a video package on him, just about who he was, his upbringing and coming from Africa and all that stuff and his parents. And it, like, I remember watching it and going like, oh my God, this is my guy. I love this guy. I want to see this guy succeed now.
I agree.
Do you remember that package?
Yes, I do. And I remember actually Apollo coming up to me shortly after he arrived and I was doing commentary at the time. And, he was explaining to me his backstory. Like you said, his life story is fascinating, but it never really has been presented to the masses in a manner that everyone could latch onto it. So I think heading back to NXT could be huge for Apollo. Looking across the landscape, Sammy, who are some people that you are excited to see what they develop into, whether that be in NXT or currently on Raw and SmackDown?
That's an interesting question. I think for sure Bron Breakker jumps to mind because I actually wrestled him in England. And it was a live event, a little tour, one of the first tours back after the pandemic when we returned to live events. It was a triple threat with myself, Bron Breakker, and Tommaso Ciampa. And I think it was like his fifth match out of the PC ever, maybe.
Yeah, maybe
his fifth,
right.
I don't know if it was his fifth match ever or I think it was his first time out of Florida. That's for sure. And he, you know, for where he was at, I thought this guy's pretty good. And then just because we were wrestling every night on this little tour, 4 or 5 nights, just seeing his improvement and his ability to absorb what we were telling him over the course of those 3 days, I was like, oh, this guy's going to be good for sure. And I think he already has gotten way, way better just from that time till now. And again, he's in a position where he's carrying that title. So he's getting to do storylines and work on his chops and just, you know, not everything's in ring. Some of it's acting, some of it's promos, some of it's, you know, it's all part of the mix. And he's getting to show some of that stuff. And I think he's doing pretty well. I don't know. I guess he's the first name that jumps to mind, at least on the NXT side. I don't know. On SmackDown, I guess it might be interesting to see what Max Dupree brings to the table here. That could be something, you know, maybe bring a couple of new characters or sure. That could be interesting to watch. I do feel like, I'm on SmackDown. So I do feel like Gunther, of course. Gunther, I want to see what he does.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Gunther.
When this airs, Gunther will be going one-on-one with Ricochet for the Intercontinental Championship.
I don't like Ricochet's chances.
talk to the audience a little bit about Gunther. We had him on here. God, a year plus ago, he was dominating NXT UK, and now the world is getting to find out what, to your point, Sammy, you have known for many years, and many of our talent up and down the rosters have traveled the world and have interacted or competed against Gunther in one form or another.
Yeah, so I think I wrestled him in 2011 or something like that, 2010, and met him ages ago in Germany, and he was really good, and I actually, I had a pretty good relationship with one of the guys who did the hiring back in NXT when I first got here. And he asked me about him, Walter at the time.
Yes.
Said, what about this Walter, Big Van Walter? I was like, yeah, great. You should get him. He's really good. And I don't know why they passed. I think at the time he had a real baby face. I don't mean he was a good guy. I mean, he looked like an overgrown child. Like he had a very childish face, which I thought was part of his appeal personally, but whatever. But now he has this really like his face is.
It's a perma scowl.
Yeah, exactly. What a great way to put it. He has this permanent scowl and this big jaw and this chin that sticks out. And now he's gotten himself into crazy shape too.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to watching his rise. And, you know, I had a little talk with him. Where was it? We did another tour recently in Europe, England, I think it was. And he was actually telling me he was kind of excited about this new phase in his career because of much of what we talked about earlier on this podcast here, but just about going from being a guy who's just like a good match guy. And, you know, you do those good matches long enough, you can, I don't want to say they're easy, but you can kind of do them in your sleep and you know you're good at it and it's just comfortable. Being taken out of his comfort zone and learning to just like entertain, to be able to go on a live event and have an entertaining match. And an entertaining match, I don't want to going back to the Knoxville thing here, I don't want to put them in two separate categories. An entertaining match and a great match doesn't mean they're the same thing. Okay. I'm just talking about when we talk about great matches, sometimes we have this very like epic, dramatic sort of structure to it. But an entertaining match is a great match if you do it right. And just learning to work a new style and dive into a new set of skills that are required to do well in WWE on SmackDown. He's excited about it, which makes me think he's going to do really well.
No doubt. I think we're all excited to see what Gunther. I still not used to calling him Gunther.
I know.
Perhaps because I'm not on SmackDown anymore. So I look back and I'm like, oh, that guy. But he definitely has my attention. All right, Sammy, we've talked WWE a lot to this point. You have been very open about how you take external influences. What is Sami Zayn working on when he's not in the WWE bubble these days? What are you up to? What are you watching? What are you listening to? How are you passing the days? These are the conversations that you and I used to get to have on the road once in a while, driving to Largo or wherever, listening to punk rock and chatting about life.
You know, I'd say the last thing that I watched that really floored me, and it's probably been a few months now, but I'm still thinking about it a lot, is that Beatles Get Back documentary.
I still haven't seen it. Edge has been on me for months to watch it.
So I just I've gotten along with Edge for forever. And now I just found out that he's a Beatles diehard.
Huge.
Like I am. And I had no idea. So now I saw him at TV, I don't know, a week or two ago, and we got into like a 30-minute conversation about the Beatles stuff. So I know Jericho's a diehard, and I know Edge is a diehard. I don't know who else we really have.
Yeah, I remember last time we were in Saudi, I was sitting in catering with him chatting and he had just watched it. And he was to watch this.
You have to watch it.
And I just haven't done it. I don't really have a valid excuse. I just haven't done it yet.
Well, what are you going to do today?
It's happening.
After this, you going to go watch it?
I'm going to try to talk my wife into going to the amusement park, Vic. That's what I'm trying to do.
Hey, congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I don't think I even got to say congratulations yet.
I appreciate it.
Wow, man.
Yeah.
How about that?
What, as the world turns.
Quite the journey. Yeah.
What a long, strange trip it has been.
Yeah. The long and winding road, if you will.
Yeah.
Nice.
We got about nine minutes left. Let's just make Beatles references.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so I'm a huge Beatles fan. And to me, man, I don't even know where to begin about this thing. It's so amazing that this thing even exists. That we have this footage and that Peter Jackson was able to like remaster it. And there's like through AI, they were able to, I don't even know what he did.
I didn't even realize Peter Jackson did it. Lord of the Rings, Peter Jackson.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
if you think, how can you make a documentary more epic? That guy can figure it out.
It's really, really great. And it's obviously heightened, I think, if you're a Beatles fan.
Right.
But even if you're not, it's pretty remarkable to have this insight. And one of the, I don't know, not to get into a whole thing here, but there is this one scene that's particularly mind-blowing to me where Paul and John have to go talk. That's Paul McCartney and John Lennon for the uninitiated. And they have to go talk about something private and they sneak off into a room. And unbeknownst to them, there's a secret camera in a flower pot or a secret tape recorder. So you have this audio of them talking when they're not aware cameras are on them. And to me, that's the most mind-blowing, maybe the most mind-blowing part of the whole thing is just hearing how they talk with just each other when they think they're alone. You know what I mean?
Very
that part was awesome. And I think just, I guess, to focus a little bit on the theme of this podcast with creativity and all that, it's really remarkable to watch the creative process of them trying to put this whole thing together. And actually, I'll tell you another reason why you guys would love it, because you work for WWE. And when you work for WWE, this is a very, very, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. It's a well-produced show. You know, it can be chaotic at times, but for the most part, we have a lot of people on the ball. Things are like, sometimes too many hands are on it. This documentary is the complete opposite. They start and they're like, okay, in 2 weeks or a month? We're going to write an album, record an album, learn all the songs and perform it on a show and make it a documentary. They have nothing. They go in with zero plans. Even before the famous rooftop concert, they don't have a location for the concert like 3 days out. And now when you come from the WWE world where everything is, on the ball, I'm like, what are you crazy? You're the freaking Beatles. You're the biggest band in the world. You haven't written any songs. What is this insanity? You just can't believe how unprepared they are going into everything too.
But much like all four Beatles, everyone on the roster is fully prepared to go, oh, we don't know what we're doing tonight. That's all right. We're going to go out there and do it anyway. Week after week.
If only people knew how good everyone in WWE is. They right? don't know. And you'll never know.
Let's
you'll
talk
never
about
know
this.
Unless you're here.
Oh, you'll Corner never know. Just got put in the ride. Of Corner, guys. Yeah.
And we don't have a lot of time, so we're going to do it quickly. But we say this all the time. Things can go crazy on a regular basis, a weekly basis. It happens. We are there. Sammy, you, Vic down in NXT, myself on Monday Night Raw. Every week, things are constantly in flux and constantly changing. Why is that? Because we have got the best team and crew on the planet Earth. And we know that despite all of the changes and chaos and variables, we are going to go out and get the job done. Because let's be honest, things are constantly changing. But even when something gets blown up right in the middle of the show, well, we'll figure it out. We're going to course correct. And between and between the talent on screen and the amazing crew backstage and at ringside and every aspect of this business, when we converge and we're on the same page, you can't touch it.
Preach.
There are times when I'm frustrated with it. I'm saying when things are going awry and I'm frustrated and I'm about to go out and I go, this just shouldn't happen. This should be the week where it all explodes so that this never happens again. But it never happens. We always pull it off. And it's a testament to how talented everybody is. It's crazy. Like, this shouldn't work, but it does.
Every
and
week.
Just once, I'm like, just once, I'd love for it to not work. So they go, guys, we can't keep operating this way. We need to have things set beforehand. We can't have it this close to the wire. You know, but no, we all
that's how we live.
Off.
But that's it.
So that's why it keeps happening.
Exactly. Exactly. That's nothing will ever change until something goes wrong. But the way everyone's right. firing on all cylinders, man, nothing truly goes wrong. It's the beauty of live TV.
Yeah.
There was a few weeks back, and you'll know what I'm alluding to, when things changed in a very drastic manner on Monday Night Raw. And I walked back through the curtain and I walked up to our fearless leader and he had a grin on his face. Hey, it's live TV. Nothing can go wrong, right? And he just laughed and shook my hand and went about his business. That's it.
I think he secretly loves it. He loves the chaos.
I think he does too. Because it keeps the crew on their toes.
Right.
So I realized this about myself because you won't know this because we don't, you know, put stuff together. You're out there already.
Right.
But I am always, always without fail. My time management is so poor. I am scampering to the last second. My music's playing. I haven't stretched properly. Not everything is set. And every week, every single week, I say, why do I do this to myself? I know what the problem is. It's poor time management. Why don't I stretch earlier, know what time it is, check my phone, check the time? Why don't I balance it out? And I realized about 6 months ago, I said, I think I secretly love this. I think I secretly love torturing myself and throwing myself in this chaotic situation. Because when you don't have everything ready, you're going out and your nerves are like, everything's up here. And in a way that like keeps you firing. I don't know. It keeps you, I don't know what it is.
But could you imagine, Sammy, everything falling into place properly for you? And you're like, oh, I'm calm. I'm ready. And then you just walk out as if everything was normal. That might throw you off your game.
Well, I don't know because I've never been a stage actor, but I would imagine a stage actor knows their lines, has prepared. And then when it's time to do the show, they walk out on stage and do the show. You would think, I'm sure they still get nervous, don't get me wrong, but you would think that's how it works. I know what I'm doing tonight and I'm going to go do it. That's not how it works in WWE.
It's not like in the middle of Hamlet, they get tossed a variable.
Yeah, exactly. It's the I remember Kofi when we were in NXT, you might've still been there, Graves, when, Kofi came to talk when the PC first opened up. So this is almost 10 years ago. And somebody asked him, what's the most important skill to have to make it on the main roster? And I remember it to this day because I tell him all the time, you were so right. You nailed it. He said, adaptability. He said, if you are able to adapt to whatever's thrown at you, that's what you need the most up there. You know, because sometimes you'll have 7 minutes and then it gets cut down to three. Sometimes you thought you were going to do one thing and then all of a sudden, 5 minutes before you go out, you're doing something completely different. You have to be able to adapt. And it's absolutely true.
Got anything else, Vic?
I just realized why my computer keeps freezing. Give me 1 second.
What is it?
It's late now. We finished.
I know it is. I'm getting all these text messages.
Let's keep this part in.
So I've heard like probably every 45 seconds, it stops for 10 seconds. And then 45 seconds, because I have my text going through and I'm getting yelled at it from NXT right now.
Wow, you BS'd your way through this very well if it was freezing that
obviously
much.
I didn't, because I asked a question and you both looked at me like I was a jackass. No pun intended. No, Johnny Knoxville.
We looked at you because it wasn't a question.
I stopped myself.
It was a statement and you just stopped talking.
It was getting to the question.
Sammy, what I want to know is this coffee is really hot.
It is hot. Right. Yeah, I go off of it. Okay. Sammy, we've talked about the journeys and you've talked about a bunch of different things here tonight. The question I love to ask all those that come on, Kevin Owens and yourself posted a picture after WrestleMania. You had the great moment, Johnny Knoxville. He had the main event with Steve Austin. How hard is it for you to stop and enjoy the moments, or is it easier now as you're further along in your career in the WWE?
Definitely easier now. Maybe than it ever has. Part of it is because I've been doing it 20 years and I'm very mindful of the fact that I'm not going to be doing it another 20. And I really take time to appreciate what we're doing. I just wish I could remember it all. But right. I mean, that one I'll remember for sure. I mean, that WrestleMania is really, really special for both Kevin and I. And what a moment when we took that picture. It just felt like we were both on top of the world for what we did. But I definitely slowed down a lot. I approach, again, not just wrestling this way, but life as well. Just like you have to take time to appreciate what you're doing. You can't just zip through it, especially when what you're doing is as special as what we're doing right now. That we get to do this. It's going to be a blink of an eye one day, you know, we'll be done. And then 20 years will pass and you'll just be like a guy who did this thing once upon a time. So you got to appreciate it when you're doing it. I'm a huge, 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 huge believer in that. And now it's much easier than it was. Possibly also another thing is because I feel a bit more comfortable in my position with the company than I did maybe 5 years ago.
That makes sense.
You know, that might be a thing. Where before I felt like I was constantly fighting for inches and trying to get a little higher up the totem pole, and I was stressing myself out, and it was harder to appreciate it when you're just looking at, oh, I got to get a little higher, a little higher, a little higher. And you're not looking at where you're at. But now I'm pretty comfortable with where I'm at. Of course, I'd always like to move up a little higher and all that stuff, or have more television time. But I kind of know that I'm going to be put on SmackDown every week, and I'm going to be doing something, and it's going to be usually pretty good. So I can appreciate it. I can appreciate it more. It's put me in a position that makes it much easier for me to slow down and appreciate what I'm doing.
Very, very cool to hear. Very cool. We appreciate it as well. Sammy, before I let you go, I know something very near and dear to your heart, your Sammy for Syria charity work. Let the ATB listeners know where they can check that out.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, big news. The second mobile clinic just started operating. So now we're currently operating two mobile clinics.
Wow, very that's awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
Man.
Very cool.
So thank you. And thank you for asking about it. But for those who don't know what we're talking about, I started back in 2017, so 5 years ago now, a campaign to raise money to launch a mobile clinic operating on the ground in Syria, which is providing medical care for people who had their, you know, homes destroyed or whatever. Because of the war in Syria. So people that wouldn't have access to healthcare, we have a mobile clinic that drives out to them and delivers healthcare to them. So we've been doing it for 5 years. And as I just said, we just finally launched a second one now. So there's two currently in operation. And this has all been possible because of the generosity of the fans who've kept the momentum going. And you can help with that. Of course, go to sammyforsyria.com. Just anything you donate helps. Your money goes directly to this mobile clinic. It's, you can directly see the results of your donation. So I appreciate you asking about it because it is something near and dear to my heart. And I do always feel a little guilty that I'm not doing more and more and more, but it has helped a lot of people and we can continue to help a lot of people. We just need to keep it going.
It sounds a great cause. Sounds like you got a lot of hard work in it, and I'm glad to see you're seeing some success pay off. And everyone listening to this, head to sammyforsyria.com. That's S-A-M-I, like Sami Zayn. sammyforsyria.com. Help out if you can. It's a great cause. It's very near and dear to the hearts of Sammy, as well as many around the globe. You can follow us at After the Bell, WWE on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find me at WWE Graves. You can find Vic at Vic Joseph WWE. Listen for free on Spotify. Just search After the Bell. Hit the follow button so you never miss an episode. We'll be back next week with more wisdom, more vitriol, and more WWE After the Bell.